Good evening, everybody. It is 6 o'clock. Welcome to the Rhyl District Council Planning Committee meeting held in public this evening. A few housekeeping matters, please. If the firearm goes off, it will be for real, and you should leave by the exit on your left or on the doors behind me to my right, an example in the car park. Conveniences are located in the corridor, where you will also find a coffee machine and drinking water. We do have a number of speakers this evening. Each speaker has 3 minutes to present their case, and I will warn each person that's speaking that they've got 30 seconds left. Would you also please make sure that mobile phones are switched off, and will all members please confirm they have a copy of their agendas? Thank you very much. Apologies for absence, please.
Apologies have been received from Councillor Cleary, Councillor Potter and Councillor Mason. Councillor Docker will substitute for Councillor Cleary. Councillor Joy Andrews will substitute for Councillor Potter, and there is no substitute for Councillor Mason.
Thank you. Does anybody have any declarations of interest, please? Councillor Hope.
Sorry about that. Yes, Chairman, item 7, personal non-prejudicial.
Thank you. Councillor Andrews.
We've all been lobbied by Webster Associates, I assume. Everybody's got the same letter as I have.
Yes.
In regard to the Wimbledon application. Personal, non-prejudicial.
Thank you very much. Councillor Windrus.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I forgot about that one. But, yeah, the agenda item 8, being lobbied, personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary.
Minutes of the last meeting, which was on the 17th of December. If members are happy with those, please can I have a proposer and seconder for those minutes? Councillor Graham, thank you. Councillor Windrus, thank you. The minutes are moved and seconded. If we can go to the vote, please. The next item on the agenda is urgent business, and I have no urgent business, and then we will move to the scheduled items to be determined, and item 6, the tree preservation working party, which is on page 8 of the agenda, members.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, this is in relation to a tree preservation order that was made early last year. And we received an objection from one of the landowners. Therefore, we're unable to confirm the order until the working party has considered the issues that the objectors raised and then, if necessary, amend the order. The trees in question, in terms of the order, there was actually 6 trees placed in the order, but the trees in contention are this sycamore tree here, T1, and this sycamore here, T2. The Tree Preservation Order Working Party met on the 7th of January 2020, and they undertook a site visit, and they considered that in light of their assessment and observations on site that removal of T1 from the schedule should take place. And the reason for this is that the tree's condition does not merit a tree preservation order. This is the poor condition of the tree. They feel like its retention span is limited and it is close to properties and the public highway. They did agree that T2 to T6 are all trees which should be subject to the order, and the order should be confirmed with that amendment, and that was a unanimous decision. It's therefore now before Planning Committee to consider that recommendation. Thank you.
Do members have any questions? No? Okay. Do you want to go straight to the vote then on that basis, if there's no questions, or do you want to debate? Fair enough. Let's move to the vote then, please. Thank you, members. That's approved unanimously. Item 7 on the agenda, which is on page 51. Which is application 19/00603/full. It is the change of use of agricultural land and building for commercial dog breeding and kennels, with alterations to include the formation of up to 10 kennels within the existing building. Lander at Cornborough Road, Sheriff Hutton. And I think it's Alan that's going to. Thank you. And we do have a speaker.
Thank you, Chair. Item 7's on page 51 of the agenda. It was reported to the Planning Committee meeting held in December of last year. It was deferred for a site visit which took place earlier this month and is now reported back to committee. There are no updates to the previously published report. I'll just run through a series of photos of the site and surrounding area. First of all, an aerial photo. The application site relates to this parcel of land here and the building on the eastern side of the field, which would be subject to the change of use from agricultural purposes to dog breeding kennels. The site is 700 metres west of the village of Sheriff Hutton, and access is gained from Cornborough Road on the southern side in that corner there. The nearest residential properties to the site are Mount Pleasant Farm, which is 60 metres to the north, to the northeast, and also there are two properties to the west, approximately 230 metres from the application site boundary, and that is Mill Hill Farm and Miller's Barn. So this aerial photo, it does show the parcel of land to the west of the building which would be used for the exercising of the dogs, and that would only be in use between the hours of 7 in the morning and 9 o'clock in the evening. As you can see, the site is located within the open countryside and within a predominantly agricultural setting. So just moving on to photos of the site. This is within the site entrance, looking east towards the building, the subject of the application. As you can see, it's a gated entrance with signage for CCTV in terms of security on site. And as you can see, the northern boundary comprises a vertical timber fence, beyond which is the hedge that fronts the highway. This photo is taken from in front of the building facing east, and this is looking into the area that would be used for the exercising of the breeding dogs. And this is panning round facing northeast, and this is roughly facing in the direction of Mount Pleasant Farm, which isn't actually visible beyond the planting, due to the planting. Panning round eastwards, this is the building which would be converted to provide kennels for up to 10 adult boxer dogs. The building was constructed with the intention of use for agricultural purposes, for the general storage and for the housing of livestock, hence the ventilation gaps within the vertical boarding. As part of the alterations, the external cladding would be overclad, and there would also be insulation provided for soundproofing. The existing opening on the western side would be reduced in size, roughly about half the size in width, and about a metre or so lower. And all openings on the western elevation, which are shown on the elevation drawing on page 60 of the agenda, would be double glazed units in terms of noise insulation. This photo is taken within the building, and as you can see, there's ventilation gaps which at present, if used, there would be obviously noise escape from the building. And this is facing towards the northern elevation here and also the western elevation. There would be no change, aside from the additional cladding, there would be no openings on these elevations. So this is the elevation nearest to, which face the nearest residential property. And again, this photo faces west across the area, which would be used for the outside exercise of dogs. And not all that clear, but you can just make out the roofs of the properties Miller's Barn and Mill Hill Farm in the distance. This photo is taken from the northern side of Cornborough Road facing towards the application site. As you can see, the upper part of the building is visible. There would be no noticeable changes from this position. There's no roof lights proposed or windows in those elevations. So in terms of its appearance, it would still appear as an agricultural building. And this is just panning round towards Mount Pleasant Farm, which, as I say, is the nearest property to the application site. So moving to the report itself, there are no issues or concerns in relation to the principle of the development, the design or appearance of the building, or any highways or ecological impacts. The principal concern, as raised by the two local residents and the parish council, is in relation to noise disturbance as arising from the use of the land, i.e. the outdoor exercise areas, and the use of the building. It's noted that the site is within a relatively isolated rural setting with low background noise levels. As a result, the application is accompanied by two noise reports, which have been assessed by the environmental health officer. With regard to the impact upon the nearest residential property, there are no openings facing Mount Pleasant Farm, and the building would be subject to acoustic improvements in the form of rock wool insulation and overcladding of existing walls. Furthermore, as shown on the elevation drawing on page 60 of the agenda, the windows would be double glazed units, and there would be a reduction in the size of the opening in the west elevation. The environmental health officer is satisfied that the noise generated within the building would not give rise to disturbance at the nearest noise-sensitive receptors. In conclusion, the proposal represents agricultural diversification and small-scale economic activity, the principle of which is supported by local policy. It is considered, on balance, that subject to the recommended conditions, the proposal is acceptable and any impacts can be mitigated and controlled. It is therefore recommended that planning permission is granted, subject to the 11 conditions as listed in the earlier report.
Thank you, Alan. We do have a speaker, Mrs. Penny Bean, if she would like to come and step forward and take a seat. Mrs. Bean, it's the large button at the bottom, and you've 3 minutes when you're ready.
The sound survey fails to take into consideration noise produced while exercising the dogs outside between 7 a.m. and 9 p.m. There's no way to mitigate the barking outside and the nuisance it will cause to neighbours. There could be over 50 dogs and pups on the site at any one time, and it's based only on the noise of 10 dogs. For the people who made the site visit, it's obvious how quiet the site is at present and just how far noise travels over the area. The boundary of the exercising area is only approximately 150 metres from Miller's Barn and Mill Hill Farm, not the 3.3 metres as stated in the report, and is closer than the 60 metres stated to Mount Pleasant. The government inspector's previous ruling on the exterior appearance of the barn was in relation to the existing barn and not another building, as inferred at the last planning meeting. This is not diversification, as the site was bought for the sole purpose of developing this use. No other land use has been attempted. Change of use of the land will result in valuable good farm, quality farmland being lost. There is a public footpath running through the centre of the lower field as shown on the definitive map, not along the boundary as claimed, which could be a conflict of use encouraging the dogs to bark as well as a security issue. Whilst the shed will be insulated for noise, any ventilation, be it mechanical or the opening of windows and doors, will be a breach of this in allowing noise to escape. There have already been a number of complaints about the site involving the RSPCA and the council dog warden, showing the clear conflict with neighbouring houses. To prove this could set a dangerous precedent for the whole of the Rydale. Any existing building, no matter how near to neighbouring houses, could be converted, allowing Rydale to be a puppy farming centre of Yorkshire. Valid planning reasons for the refusal of this application are very clear. Policy SB19 relates to new development, respecting the context provided by its surroundings, and should be well integrated. This is anything but when new PVC windows and doors are added. Policy SB20 states new development should not have a material adverse impact on the amenity of present and future occupants, the users or occupants of neighbouring land and buildings, or the wider community by virtue of its design, use, location and proximity to neighbouring land uses. This proposal fails on every level. The sound report even admits that the noise measurements may not be representative of the location of the nearby houses, and the two-hour period of testing may not be representative of the background noise level. They also noted in the report that the dog barking is difficult to predict, and this questions the accuracy of their findings. No account of the noise made whilst the dogs are outside for a period of up to 14 hours a day has been made, and there is no way to mitigate against this. Thank you.
Alan, do you want to come back on that?
Thank you, Chair. Just on a couple of points, the robustness of the two noise surveys was put to the environmental health officers, and they were satisfied in terms of the times of day that the noise reports were undertaken and the length of time. In terms of the caveat that's included in the reports, in terms of the element of doubt, it is accepted that dog barking is difficult to predict, and that is acknowledged in the noise survey. The noise surveys do state that they do not anticipate any increase in noise levels if any puppies were to bark at the same time as the adult dogs, and the noise survey was undertaken on the basis of all adult dogs barking at the same time, although in reality it's unlikely, dogs when exercising are unlikely to generate levels of noise disturbance. That is the conclusion of the noise assessment. And then in terms of security, acknowledge that there is the public right of way in close proximity. That is a matter for the applicant, and the applicant does lock the site and does provide CCTV.
Thanks, Alan. I'm going to open it up for questions from the committee, please. Councillor Joy Andrews.
Yes, it's just the last comment you made. The lady said that there was a public right of way across, but the site is locked. So does that mean the public right of way can't be used when...
No, the securing and locking of the site would not obstruct the use of the public right of way.
If there are no other questions, I'll go to... I was going to come to you in any case because you're the local member. Councillor Graham, you...
Just a question. Do I understand that the owner will not be on the site all the time?
That's correct, yes. The owner lives in Strensel, and I understand would be there through the working day, through normal working hours, and does intend to visit during the night. In terms of the breeding licences, I understand that they wouldn't be able to achieve the high standard because they aren't on site round the clock. But the applicant does state the intention to move nearer to the site to care and manage the dogs.
Councillor McKenzie.
Thank you, Chair. I will echo the problem of noise. Whilst I hear that there's quite a bit of work being done on the actual building, I think it's unreasonable to expect that all doors and windows will be closed all day long. And dogs, at least 10 or possibly 10 of them running on exercise, they're not going to run mute. And there are other properties quite close. I've been on the site visit. In an area like that, sound will carry. And I know that dogs barking carry a long way. I've got a bit of experience on that. And the other issue I've got is potential for crime. These dogs potentially will be very valuable dogs. You know, we all see the price of breeding dogs and their puppies these days. A locked gate and CCTV will not stop a determined attempt to steal them. So there are my reservations about this. Thank you.
Did you have a question, Councillor McKenzie, or not?
No, sorry, I thought we'd gone into debate.
Councillor Hope, this is your ward. I'm going to throw it open to you now. Sorry, Eric.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, what I was going to do before was clarify what Councillor Andrews was saying about the locking of the gates and the footpath. The gate will be locked at the top road there where it says access. That's where the gate is. Now the footpath is, can you go back one, Alan, please? It's down at the bottom of the, where it looks ploughed bit and the green bit, right at the bottom here, down there. The footpath runs along that boundary hedge. So anybody can get in if they want to go across field or wherever. That was what I wanted to say before. Thank you. I must be honest, I have great concerns over this. We had one similar application before for a small farm, and that went to appeal. The appeal put against us, but as I say, it just doesn't. And to conclude what Alan said there, you know, it's right. We're looking now at the boundaries with the trees all in leaf. See them now when they aren't in leaf, and it does look a lot different. You can see the building a lot easier, and sound will carry a lot more when there's no leaves on the trees. But as I say, I'm not happy with it at all, but see if anybody else wants to make any other comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Do we have a proposal and a second? Councillor Windrus.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I went on the site visit, and yes, there are reservations about it, but as the noise can be mitigated by environmental health, and they're happy with it, and I can't really see a planning reason to refuse this, so I will move officer recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Like Councillor Windrus, I too went on the site visit. I'm not particularly happy with it as an application, but I will second it because we have no planning grounds to say no to this application. So it has been moved and seconded for approval. And so if members will go to the vote, please. Yeah. That's four votes for, three against, and two abstentions. So the application is approved, subject to conditions. Thank you. We move to item 8 on the agenda, which is on page 64. This is application number 18/00580/M4. It is Grace Max Limited. It's the change of use for part of an airfield land to allow the siting of 43 number timber clad static holiday units with decking, a manager's accommodation, permeable gravel site road, car parking, site landscaping, etc. I'm not going to go anymore, and it's a field off Hunger Hill Lane, Wimbledon, Kirby Moorside, and I think it's Rachel. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, there is much to discuss with regards to this application, so I apologise to members of the public and members of committee now how long this will take to go through the various documents that we've received since the agenda was published. What I would like to do first is take members through the plans briefly as they are now presented. But what I'll do first is take you through the sort of context of the site. So Wimbledon Airfield is a general aviation airfield, and it relates to this particular runway here, which is of particular sensitivity with regards to the application. The application site, in terms of the red outline, extends around this area here, which in effect follows the course of the land which is outside of the existing runway area. And it also excludes the area of the potato store, but it then continues around up to the north of this boundary here and around just adjacent to the hangar that is owned by the adjacent landowner. And this is a more up-close photograph of the site. So the key differences are the fact that there is now proposed for the use of acoustic bunding, which would be 9.5 metres in height, extending to the north of the potato store, and 7.5 metres in height, extending to the south of the potato store. And it would be sited primarily within the areas that are treed currently on the site, and it would be clad in natural vegetation. The number of the units hasn't been reduced, but because units have been taken out of the northern component of the site, and that has allowed the trees to be retained, there has been an increased density of the units in the southern area. However, there's still at least 8 metres between the units, which is quite a substantial distance for those lodges. So yes, here's the bunding that's being proposed, soil bunding, with a further bund and acoustic fence. The acoustic fence is 4.5 metres in height. This is the footpath, which is to extend onto Hunger Hill Lane and then continue up till the road forks, the occupants of the lodges would then have to proceed on the road, although signage is proposed as part of a Section 278 agreement with the local highway authority. Manager's residence is this unit here. The site office has been excluded from the proposal now. We added this insert to give members some context around the sort of operation of the runway. This is an insert from Pooley's, which is one of the nationally recognised guides for aviation use for pilots. Runway 1735 is in operation. It's just at the moment activities have ceased due to obstructions on the runway. Runway 2204 is owned by another landowner who has also made comments recently on the site, and this is operational, and it is also used by a company called Swift Aviation. This map is a map to diagrammatically present the aviation safety measures that are in effect being semi-proposed by the application in terms of compliance with those, and also to set out what is required in terms of safe aviation measures in respect of, particularly in terms of takeoff and landing, which are the most critical points in flight. There are two sort of key guidance documents. One relates to aviation safety in general aerodromes, and the other relates to licensed aerodromes. What this diagram seeks to achieve is to demonstrate that actually, despite being a general aerodrome, it can actually achieve a higher level of safety specification than actually it's required to. Just to explain to you what this plan actually shows, the runway, which is Dr. Slater's runway, 1735, is in yellow, and this area to the right, although it hasn't come out very clearly on this plan, is actually shaded in a beige colour, and that is known as the runway strip. And that actually should also cover on the other side, but it's outside of the landowner's consideration. So it also extends 30 metres beyond the edge of the runway strip, and it also includes a 30-degree vector from either side of the centre line of the runway. And these are key areas which are required to remain free of vertical obstructions in order to ensure that in the event of an emergency event, obviously there is no impediment to the plane's sort of unimpeded landing. So what it also shows as well is, and I'll have to look at my notes for this, the transitional obstacle limitation surface, which is in effect a 1 in 5 gradient, which extends outwards and upwards from the runway strip. And what the other plans demonstrate is that the lodges and the bunding are all well beneath, and the landscaping also would be well beneath this notional line of which is meant to ensure that no structures, be they living or otherwise, can permeate that particular layer. Going on to the photos, most of members have been on the site visit, so I will go through these very quickly. That is the entrance, the northern entrance to the site where the public footpath would be. Ooh, not that quick though. And that again is the access track that leads to the northern entrance to the site. And these are the trees which in effect form an important element of the landscaping for the existing potato store. This is looking in a westerly direction towards the general sort of aerodrome area. To the right here is actually a hangar, but it's obscured by trees. Again, this is another image. That one's looking in a more northerly direction. And again, this is starting to approach the runway. And you can see evidence of the bunding and the tree planting that's been undertaken by the applicant. This is the northernmost extent of the runway, and this area here is within the applicant's ownership and the applicant's control. This is one of a series of water containers, which you'll see more images of, which are there to act as a demarcation between the two land ownerships. This is looking in an easterly direction towards the potato store, which you can make out on the left of the shot. And this is a sort of shot of the typical vegetation that is within the bunding that surrounds the perimeter of the applicant's ownership. And that's an image of the runway extending in a southerly direction. Mr. Herbert's, the applicant's side of the runway is this side, and Dr. Slater's side is on the other side. And again, that's looking in a southerly direction down Dr. Slater's runway. This is looking from the runway in an easterly direction towards the potato store, which is this not too small building. And this is at the northern extent of the runway. And this is a sort of key area of contention because it's the bunding which is within the CAP 973 area that needs to be kept free of vertical obstructions. So it would be an area of land that would need to be, that bunding would need to be removed. And the plans show that that would be undertaken, and it is conditioned as well in one of the conditions. This is basically looking to the west of the runway into the sort of open agricultural fields that make up quite a considerable part of the whole sort of Wombleton aerodrome area. And this is the ending of the runway and going off into the taxi area where the hangars are. This is the hangar building here where up to two planes can be stored. This is looking from the runway on Mr. Herbert's side, looking into the site. You can see the potato store there, and this is one of the key principal areas of trees that would be retained, but it's where also the 7.5 metre high acoustic bunding would go. And that was the plane taking off, so I thought I would take a photograph of that. But that is at the most extreme extent of the runway. In this direction is the runway 0422, and that's going off down and used by Swift Aviation. And this is, in effect, the end of the runway. This section here would have gone beyond, but it's now truncated by Hunger Hill Lane. And this is basically extending back up. And that is the potato store, and the site would be primarily focused in this area here, with the majority of the units in this part of the site. And that was another example of the bunding currently in place and the planting there on it. And this is the main sort of southern component of the site area. And this is looking into the access points on the site for the southern entrance. And this would be the vehicular access to the site, which has had works done to it. And it's clear that a replacement hedging and bunding has been planted. Conditions around the access have been set out by the local highway authority, and that they would need to be complied with in any event. And that is looking from the access point as it would be in a northerly direction along Hunger Hill Lane. And that, for context, is the in effect looking in a westerly direction from Hunger Hill Lane into the potato store site. So this is the development that has very recently occurred on the runway strip. This is permitted development. It relates to an agreement whereby materials and construction implements can be stored on the site for up to 20 weeks, five months. It's to allow grounding of electrical overhead power lines in the national park. And it is a temporary matter, and it's in effect a sort of temporary operational development, but it is permitted development. So on that basis, it's not something that the local planning authority can take action against. It's in a similar respect, it's very much the same as the water containers that exist down the site. in respect of those containers, they extend about 80 metres down the runway, not on the operational runway, but they are within the runway strip, and that is an identified area on that aviation safeguarding map that I showed you earlier that was supposed to be kept free of obstructions. In terms of how this matter affects the proceedings, we have been seeking legal advice in terms of whether or not we can review the conditions that we've proposed and as recommended for members, or we look to having a legal agreement drawn up, which in effect could not require the removal of this particular compound until such a time as it needed to be removed, because ultimately it is permitted development. But the legal agreement would then ensure going forward that there were no further obstructions in this area. But these are further images of the compound. Just in the mists is the potato store. So it is actually focused within the runway strip. You can just make out here there is a cross which demarcates an area do not fly. And it is focused to the northern extent, but that is, in to be fair, probably the more sensitive end of the runway area. Right. So in terms of the responses that we've received, we have received 6 responses in support, and they're from Neil Herbert, located in Manchester, Daniel Mortimer in Leeds, Piers Kennedy in Nottingham, David Bingham in Pembrokeshire, David Dale Sunley from Kirkcudbright, and Caroline Hilton from Haywood. Mr. Sunley is focusing on supporting the use of the wider airfield for tourist enterprises, and he's identified on a plan a general area that he would seek to use for wider tourism lodge enterprises and other tourist activities. Officers advise that this is very much a matter of planning policy, and it's not something that is being capable of being considered within the context of a planning application, which is very site-specific in its nature. The responses consider that it represents a good use of the land and a positive change. And a lot of them disagree that the adjacent land uses should be considered as they are outside of the application area. A lot of the responses have also said that the disagreements between the landowners are a civil matter and therefore shouldn't be considered further. Officers' response to this is that adjacent land uses are very much material planning consideration, and also considered in relation to how a development performs when considered against the development plan. So it's very important that we are fully aware of the implications of a development on adjacent land uses. The report has already set out the fact and sort of balanced the considerations and the benefits of the scheme within the report. And the matters of the dispute between the landowners in terms of as a civil matter, well, unless it specifically relates to the impact of the development, then on that's proposed on land, and yes, that's something we wouldn't be able to take into account, but this has raised issues in terms of the adjacent land uses. We've then had further responses from Dr. Slater, and when I find his responses, he has sought that we seek further clarification with regards to the key terms. And he has stated, though, that he doesn't expect me to read those out to you now, but that he would like to see a greater technical clarification within the wording of the conditions. That is something that we can do to a certain extent, but a lot of it relates to actual legislation that is not, strictly speaking, part of planning legislation. I, in retrospect, wish that I'd, in the report, when I talked about the key terms, technical terms that are used around aviation safeguarding, that I'd couch it in layman's terms, because that's what it was intended to be. But Dr. Slater has sought to provide much more detailed technical clarification, which is understandable, because that's what he considers is very important in terms of ensuring that the aviation safeguarding matter can be, as he views it, properly considered and in a sort of very sort of technical capacity. We've also had a response from Mr. Rook. Mr. Rook is one of the adjacent landowners who owns and operates the potato store. And he has written in saying that he's, firstly, that the potato store operates from September to June, so it isn't 3 years, which is stated in the application. The fact that the potatoes could be stored for much longer is noted, but the mitigation that is being proposed by this application is not affected by this because it's not a function of duration. It's a function of its ability to deal with the noise, whether it acts on a single day or whether it's for 6 months of the year. He has sought to try and see if he can achieve mains electricity under the planning application, and that would then eliminate the need for a generator, which in effect generates noise in itself. He also states that the bunding that is being proposed as the means of noise attenuation, he feels that that's adversely affecting the amenity of the site and raises issues in terms of loss and light and space. Officers would argue that that would only really be relevant if we were looking at a domestic property, but we aren't. We're looking at a potato store. That's a sizeable building, and the actual noise attenuation measures are actually to be included within the treed area around the site, and obviously there is actually no legal right to a view as well. So the issues that Mr. Rook has raised really relate more around to this, in effect, what would be a civil matter between himself and Mr. Herbert in terms of the provision of an electrical supply, and therefore that's something that officers feel shouldn't be taken further into account. We've had a further representation from Aidan Blythe, who is the adjacent owner and operator of one of the runways, runway 422, and he is concerned about the effect of turbulence created by the development in a crosswind situation on a light aircraft using the neighbouring runway. He has asked previously that the 13 chalets nearest the runway be removed from the application. And he's also now concerned about the implementation of the noise acoustic bunding based on its height. He considers that that will increase the turbulence significantly, and he then goes on to speak about whether or not there is a need for the lodges, given that a scheme at Pickering is now in administration. In terms of competition and such matters, that's not something that we can take into account as material planning consideration. Now, in terms of the turbulence, officers were wondering that if the acoustic bunding is in place surrounding a building that is already of quite a considerable size, whether or not there is already a strong sort of effect of turbulence present on the site already by virtue of the potato store. And the bunding is to be located within the treed area, so it's already within an area that has a significant height variance. So that is the response from Mr. Blythe. We've also had two responses from Mr. Simpson, and they are primarily around, in effect, the compound and activities taking place on the site recently. He's also asked for further clarification around the hedgerow removal. Officers would state that in terms of taking enforcement action, that's discretionary, and it would only be in relation to the fact that if the actual access wasn't then constructed in compliance with the approved plans and obviously in terms of the conditions that the local highway authority have recommended be included in any approval that is granted. And in terms of electricity substation, he's asked that the power cables be taken underground. That's something that we would expect to happen naturally, because ultimately, if they didn't, they would be in immediate breach of the conditions around ensuring that there are no vertical obstructions within the zones that need to be kept free of obstruction, because the actual path of the electrical cabling is to go across the northern end of the runway. And I think I will leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rachel. We do have three speakers this evening. Our first speaker is Sarah Foster, who is the representative from the Parish Council. Would you like to take a seat? It's the large button at the bottom. We'll activate the mic. You've 3 minutes to present your case. Thank you.
Good evening, Chairman and Councillors. My name is Sarah Foster, speaking on behalf of Wimbledon Parish Council, who are united against this application. The question is viability, given there are at least four holiday camps, parks within only 2 miles from Wimbledon, and no less than 69 within 20-mile radius. A further 43 cabins in what is supposed to be open countryside is still felt an excessive amount, particularly in such close proximity to already established businesses. Whilst understanding the importance of the tourism industry, if investment were necessary, must surely be given to local farming families who may have had to diversify in order to maintain a living from the struggling agricultural industry. Local people are working hard to make letting businesses viable throughout the year, even from their homes. There are an abundance of holiday cottages in the surrounding villages. There are hotels and pubs too. Surely visitors to the area have more than enough accommodation to choose from, particularly during the winter months. And what about cost? Considering the static cabins appear to be designed for semi-permanent living and not necessarily just visiting the area, it begs the question, will this be an added cost to local taxpayers, putting further pressure on the infrastructure in terms of schools, surgeries, and in particular the local roads? Residents whose homes are close to the airfield, the working farms, and the aviation businesses up until recently have managed to live harmoniously, but are now understandably protective of this space, and not without reason. The aerodrome is without doubt an extremely vulnerable part of the country, with misuse and exploitation a constant threat. With conflict of interest with the working potato store and the private airstrip, the water butts have been of great concern in terms of danger to aircraft attempting to use the airstrip adjacent to the site. Wimbledon Parish Council ask for these points raised to be carefully considered and hope finally for a good conclusion to be made. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next speaker is Mr. Simpson, who is an objector to the proposal. Thank you, Mr. Simpson. It is the large button at the bottom. You've 3 minutes. I'll give you a prompt with the last 30 seconds.
Good evening, Madam Chairman, members. This application could so easily have been determined sooner had the applicant engaged in meaningful consultation with the local community and in particular the adjacent landowners. The aviation report state coexistence of park homes and the runway is possible. I sense that people are not against development on this site per se, provided that the scale is appropriate and the environmental and safety challenges associated with the site are addressed, benefits to all parties are possible. Members should also be aware, bear in mind the technical advances taking place in developing green air taxis and electric aircraft, which need safe, hard runways. And I think it's important to bear that in mind, the needs of the runway as well as the park homes. This much revised application still presents some worrying concerns, and while some of these have been covered in the officer's recommendations, the applicant's actions to date demonstrate that future compliance is far from guaranteed. There has been little respect shown for the planning process, as shown by the late submission of papers causing deferments and resulting in frustration and inconvenience to those attending meetings. Works carried out prior to approval, such as the grubbing out of a mature hedgerow on Unger Hill Lane, forming a new access and installing concrete crossings. Creating the buns and the planting trees, they're preventing the safe use of runway 1735 for 2 years. Provocative actions against neighbours, such as the sighting of water containers on the runway. And most recently, and since the issue of the report being considered tonight, the establishment of a site compound which has ignored the drainage and highway requirements set out in the report. The planning authority has been most accommodating and has shown great patience, I suspect at considerable cost. Unfortunately, the applicant's actions have been quite intimidating and have shown no respect for the process. Therefore, my request to the committee is to instruct the applicant to cease all current activity on site, which is in breach of the recommendations, and to complete the remediation of all works carried out without approval before there is any further consideration of the application. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. And the final speaker is the agent, Mr. Webster. Is he not here? It would appear the agent's not here despite registering to speak, so apologies for that, everybody. Rachel, do you want to come back on any of the issues that were raised? Thank you.
If I may, thank you. Thank you, Chairman. Yes. The matter of sort of marketing and competition in relation to different sort of tourist enterprises and tourist accommodation, that is not actually a material planning consideration. So it's not something that officers have taken into account within the sort of assessing the sort of and balancing the positives versus the negatives of the application. Also, in terms of the conditions around occupancy, we have policies within the development plan that set out very stringent requirements with regards to occupancy of tourist accommodation. It does allow it to be used on a year-round basis, and it allows it to be used in a private capacity, but that it must be only for up to 31 days in a year, and that in terms of commercial letting, that must be for a minimum of 140 days in a year. In terms of the water containers and in terms of the compound that's been placed on the runway, the water containers are chattels. They aren't actually development. So they're not something that the local planning authority can take account, can take enforcement action against, nor can they take enforcement action against something that the government has deemed has, in effect, permitted development rights. The bunding is a different matter. That is operational development. And there are elements of that bunding that would need to be removed in order for the runway to be allowed to operate safely. But that would not overcome the issue of the water containers. That's all I wanted to say.
I'll open it up for questions from members. Councillor Riley.
I represent Wombleton Ward. And I've taken an interest in this application. I'm making questions or an observation because there didn't appear to be any questions, so I apologise. I'm jumping the gun a bit, really. So I'll just step back from there, really.
Can I just say, do members have any questions? Otherwise, right, Councillor Windrus first. Can we do questions first, Councillor Ryby, and then we'll move into debate. Councillor Windrus.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just wondered, are highways happy with the lack of a footpath? I mean, it seems rather dangerous to me that people are walking along the road into Wimbledon where there isn't a footpath.
The local highway authority ultimately instigated the proposed formation of the footpath. They required the formation of a footpath to improve the accessibility of the site to more sustainable modes of transport, albeit an infrequent bus, but I believe that there is a bus that serves Wimbledon. There's also a pub in the village. There is a general promotion of tourist accommodation being developed with more accessible means of accessing services and facilities. So they instigated it. Unfortunately, there isn't enough verge space to extend the footpath from the edge of the development site right to the village itself. It can only extend, and my memory serves me, doesn't serve me well enough to remember the actual junction, but it only can go as far to where then there's the road that takes you off to back up to the A170. So there would be a section of road which for it is accepted for those of less mobility, those in a wheelchair, those with a pushchair, those walking a dog, who take up a little bit more space in the road. They may feel more vulnerable and disinclined to use the road. And I did ask if we could look at signage, both on the road and signs within the vicinity of the road, to alert drivers to the possibility of pedestrians in the roadway. And this has been taken forward by the local highway authority and is in one of the conditions that is proposed and recommended.
Councillor Andrews.
Is this a balance recommendation? I mean, it's not one where if we were to vote against it, we would be most likely to lose, is it? Lose the appeal, that is.
Chairman, I don't think my crystal ball's better than anybody else's in terms of how an inspector might deal with a refused planning application. This is a complicated application. There are pros and cons with it. There are potential benefits to be gained for adjacent landowners if planning permission is granted and these conditions are taken on board. But you're making judgments on what weight you give things, and that's really all I can say to your question. I wouldn't like to say it's not balanced, Chairman, because all our applications are balanced to some extent. Clearly, we're trying to we're taken down a path by government to try and come up with solutions rather than not come up with solutions. We've had this application a long time, and I think I'm correct in saying Rachel told me this morning there have been 8 different iterations of the plans on this scheme, 5 of which led to reconsultation. And I think this application, I think I'm correct in saying, started out with 65 lodges. We're now at 43. You know, so during that process, the application has changed quite considerably. Elements of design have changed. Partial footpath links have been added to the application. Admittedly, the roadway that then, if people are familiar with the site and it's linked back to the village, then is a somewhat contorted lane. But the Highway Authority have given that careful assessment before they've come up with a situation where they think they can safely live with this. I think the particular difference on this particular application with regard to this type of development in the vicinity of the airfield, and as you've seen from the aerial photographs and other things, there are other sort of leisure-related uses on the airfield and close to it elsewhere, is the actual physical proximity of this to what I think is an unlicensed runway on this particular instance, but nevertheless still a runway. And I think this has been given a level of rigour that I've not come across really with an airstrip before, to the extent that we've had at least two aviation reports, I think, done on this particular scheme, to come to a situation whereby on these plans we've got a safe landing strip for approaching or taking off aircraft. I think the issue we're wrestling with now is the things that ordinarily we wouldn't be able to control, such as those water tanks that you see there, or the permitted development that's happened just in the last few days, where another developer who replaces overhead lines and things in the national park with telegraph poles and bits and pieces like that has lawfully established a compound also close to the functioning airstrip. And so for us to be happy to recommend this, we're feeling the need to control that so that the airstrip is capable of functioning safely. At the end of all this, if this application wasn't approved, we can't get rid of those water butts. So the problem still exists for an adjacent landowner. One of the potential benefits is achieving that.
Councillor Joy Andrews.
Could you just possibly go back to, I think it was probably the first photograph. And there was, I think it was an aerial where we, or it could have been even, keep going. That one. What is in the bottom left-hand corner? I know that's not relevant to that, but I was just thinking for access, whether they access a road at all that hasn't got footpath. I presume it's some...
I think that's off Moorfield Lane.
Yeah.
Looking at Alan, because we've had...
Yeah, it's Wombleton Caravan Park.
In right. A different
okay. It does, yeah. I'll just... basically, it ends up Moorfield Lane and then onto Common Lane. I think it's Common Lane. Oh, is it Common Lane? Common Lane that then extends up.
Okay. Photograph to see that although that these other areas which were probably in historically munition stores and all sorts of things on the airfield, it's part of what we would all conceive of as Wombleton Aerodrome. There are other recreational uses, some of which have been well long established on that part of the airstrip, but not as close to a currently functioning runway.
Any further questions? Okay, I'll move this into debate. Councillor Riby, you're the local member for the area, so you now have your opportunity to speak. Thank you.
My apologies for jumping the gun. Yeah, I've followed this for the most of the time I've been on the council, obviously, which is quite recent. However, the history goes back, and we're now 75 years on, I guess, from when that was built for what it was originally built for. And, you know, it is high time that these scars are sort of removed if necessary or possible. However, we've got two airfield strips on there, which arguably are active, and we're putting holiday lets by the side of them. Granted, there's caravans there already, so people live with that, but it does seem strange that we should even consider aircraft flying over where families will be in their holiday lets to me. The last time this was at the committee meeting, I actually was proposing that we made a judgment that night. The officers wanted deferment. I was disappointed. I thought we should make a decision and get on with it. I'm now of a different opinion. I think we should still have a deferment, despite all the hassle that you've had, because there are so many outstanding things that have not been settled, and so many things... And I'm a wee bit amazed that, you know, one of the reasons for giving planning permission is so we can control the water butts. The water butts are a temporary marker on the runway. They're nothing of any real relevance. That's not a very good reason for granting planning permission, in my opinion. There are many more reasons for getting this cleared up, like the bunding must be cleared. That's in certain areas. There are various things that are still outstanding that you say you can't control. It's a civil matter. They need controlling before we grant planning permission, in my opinion. I'm kind of for it, but if it complies, but I think and we should defer again until a lot of the outstanding matters are solved and resolved. So I propose that we defer this one more time.
Anybody else? Councillor Paul Andrews.
I'm not at all comfortable, Chair, about granting planning permission for buildings right close to, so close to the runway. If you're using a light aeroplane, if somebody comes to land on that strip in foggy conditions, a mistake could so easily be made. I'm not happy about that at all. The water butts, they've been put there in order to hold the owner of the other property to ransom, I suspect, and also to sort of hold this council to ransom. And I don't think we should give in to that sort of thing. I would have proposed refusal, but I will support Councillor Ryby up for a deferment. In principle, I think the whole principle of having a development on this place is completely wrong.
Councillor Ryby, can we clarify what you mean by deferral? Do you want the officers to go away and resolve the issue of the compound, etc.?
In effect,
exactly what are we deferring the application for?
Deferment, my interpretation of my statement of deferment is that there are still so many unresolved situations that are outstanding, and I support one of the speakers who suggested that these should be resolved. I understand from the planning officer's point of view that if everything is complied with, then most people reluctantly are acceptable, and that is the case with me. I find the application is acceptable, but we seem to have had this running, ongoing, you can't do this, well, we'll do this, and then it doesn't get done, and then there's and the civil matters come into it. I don't think, in my opinion, we should grant planning permission. I go back to the water butts, which gives us control of the water butts, which would give planning permission for that. I don't see the water butts as a major problem of any permanent significance, and certainly not sufficient to give planning permission to get rid of the water butts, because the water butts will have to go anyway. Unless you say the guys that have the runways can't fly their aeroplanes, and they're already there, and you must have harmony, you must have agreement, and at the moment we do not have any of that. So deferment means we should hold back giving planning permission until the outstanding matters are resolved.
The reason I was trying to sort of tease out what the issue with the deferring, what members are wanting us to defer this application for is that, and please don't take this the wrong way, but if we defer this tonight and we're no further forward, and the applicant is in that luxurious position of actually being able to say to himself, do you know what, I've had enough of this, I'm going to appeal a non-determination, it's not taking it any further forward. So I've no idea how that conversation might go. But what I'm trying to do is get to a point in time where the request for the deferral, if there is one tonight, and that's the decision that's made tonight, that the officer is clear in her mind what she's going back to the applicant to seek to do and in what sort of time frame. Because the last time this was deferred, I think we all thought we'd be getting this back to this December meeting, and lo and behold, here we are, and it's nearer the end of January. All the time we've got other people in the vicinity who are not happy with the status quo. And some of that is relating to operational development that, in theory, we could serve an enforcement notice to cover and seek removal of things like the offending piece of the bund on the northern end of the runway that is an impediment. We can do that. There's an appeal against that, potentially. So you, every time that we serve a notice, there's a potential something that's kicking it into the longer grass. What we also then have are things that, on the face of it, in isolation, we can't currently control. And I come back to the water butts because that was where the issues really first started in terms of the safety of aircraft using the airstrip. That isn't development, so we can't do anything. And yes, the owner could, but it would be a property law issue and ultimately end up in court and probably longer than a planning appeal would take to to sort out. And we've also now, within the last few days, had the issue of the storage compound appear out of the mist, as it were, this morning, which I saw myself yesterday. So those are the things that I think, in terms of this development and the landowner, some of which isn't the development, the Bund is part of its development, the water butts aren't, and the compound isn't part of this development, but in reality they are things which are affecting the functioning of the adjacent landowner's land and business, his airstrip. So if it's that you're wanting us to resolve, we can have those conversations and have those discussions and potentially look at conditions that can resolve the compound, can resolve the water butts, or if conditions won't do it, get to a point where our solicitors have said, well, actually, you know what, we need a legal agreement. We need, rather than conditions, we need them to sign up to do something. We can have all of those discussions, but I'm just needing a lead from you as to what you want us to go off and do, because I'm at the moment I'm not completely, totally sure what you want me to do. Chairman, I mean, sorry, that was just an aside as to why a condition, why a legal agreement. In broad terms, they follow similar tests, but broadly speaking, and I'll defer to the solicitor on this, if you can use a condition to do something, you use a condition, and if you can't, then you use a legal agreement. There's a lot of smiling going on across there. The beauty with a legal agreement is that you can injunct it, whereas if somebody breaches a planning condition, you can enforce against it, but it takes a long time to potentially put it right.
Thank you. I'll just say a few words, Chairman. So with the site compound, the National Power Grid compound, that is something that could be subject to a pre-commencement condition. No problem with that. And Mr. Housen's correct. We should go down the conditions route rather than the agreement route, if we have an option. There are, however, positive obligations we'd like to impose, I think, in terms of site management. I think that's the sense of most people's contributions tonight, at least. And that would be best secured by a Section 106 planning obligation. Of course, all that depends on whether we're happy with the principle of going forward. I heard what the proposer and the seconder both said. It would be interesting to know whether they are happy with the principle or not, if we're having a deferment, because if we're not even happy with the principle, it seems pretty pointless having a deferment.
Councillor Andrews.
As I said, Chair, I'm not happy with the principle. And if somebody else will second me, I would certainly propose refusal.
Councillor Andrews. Councillor Joy Andrews. Sorry.
Thank you. Just looking through the recommendation and the conditions, I mean, there's 12 pages of conditions. Do we feel, and listening to what's been said by a member of the public, the level of, I wouldn't call it animosity, but there is obviously ill feeling on both sides possibly. Are we confident as a council, and this is probably to Gary more than anybody, that we can enforce and look at these conditions? Because I'm sure that the general public will be looking at them, and probably the phone will be red hot on anything that isn't.
I think in the context of where the negotiations had got to when the report was written, which was before that compound appeared, we'd got to a point where I think all of those conditions are enforceable, reasonable, and all the tests of it, as you have seen. But they were written in a time before a permitted development was then exercised on the airfield, which came, put bluntly, out of the blue to everybody. And I think in the context of where we are, where we're, I think, getting to a point where, principle aside, we would want positive actions to be taken. You know, pre-commencement conditions can be talked about, but also other things relating to either non-development or permitted development. I personally would feel safer with a legal agreement covering those aspects. That doesn't mean there aren't planning conditions also on the development, but it's backed up with a legal agreement to cover particular points of concern. I think that's where we've got to, you know, where we've got to now. Is something that would include, if it were to be approved, a planning permission with still a fair number of conditions on it to cover the normal, more normal stuff, but also a legal agreement to cover the steps that we want to be carried out as well to accompany the conditions.
And is that something we need to speak about and agree on tonight, or is that something that the officers would do after?
In 106, I mean, normally they're usually relating to developer contributions and will tell you how many affordable houses or, you know, contributions they might be. This is a slightly different form of agreement where we're asking somebody to agree to do things or remove things, or, you know, whatever it might be. But equally, because it's something that needs agreement, we would need to be able to get the other side to agree to that. I think we're not in a unilateral situation, which is what a developer throws to us, unless they chose to, which seems unlikely. So we would need to be able to agree what we think you want us to agree to and bring you something back, if that's what you're saying. But I think what the solicitor is saying is, well, we could do all that work, but if you're not happy with the principle, it's pointless.
Councillor Graham.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Having listened to all that, I mean, I don't agree with the principle either, and personally I would like to second what Councillor Paul Andrews has said, what he has proposed.
Councillor Ryby, you indicated.
I'm going back to what I meant by deferring, and it's coming a little bit more clearer to me, having listened to Mr. Howson, legal documents. So my deferment proposal would be that the legal documents to enforce the stipulations, the conditions you're applying, were in place before, so that came first rather than the planning. So the only way you could do that, as far as I can see, is defer. But if that's not possible, then it's no point in me speaking.
Councillor, you could withdraw.
Well, I could do.
Move approval subject to the 106 agreement, which means that there is no planning permission granted until the legal agreement is actually signed up. That would help.
Okay, so that kind of is what I meant then, I guess.
Maybe. The content of the agreement obviously will be quite complicated and, as indicated, will be brought back to the committee, I think.
Chairman, if that's what's...
Councillor Andrews.
If that's what's going to happen, then I have to withdraw my support for the deferral and go for the refusal. I mean, just to put it in the worst possible scenario, and I know that lawyers are always talking in the case of the worst possible scenario, how would any of us feel if, having granted this planning permission, in 2 years, 10 years, 20 years, an aircraft came down and in flames and several people were killed? I would feel very guilty.
Thanks, Councillor Andrews. I hear what you're saying, but what we've got to look at is a cogent planning reason to refuse the application, and I'm not sure aviation law is part of planning law.
Well, Chair, I think the nearness to the runway probably is, and I'm sure we could add in landscape considerations and all other sorts of planning reason conditions as well, if we wish.
I mean, can I ask a question? If this wasn't for the runway, would you have a landscape objection to these 43? It's not a question of throwing other things in, Chairman, because that won't carry anything with an inspector. You know, if you've got one good reason, you've got one good reason. You don't throw in four mate weights. Were it not for the airstrip, would we be refusing this because of its landscape impact? We're not recommending refusal because of a landscape impact on this site, in this location, for this scheme. We've probably become too focused on the aviation safety, actually, in some respects. There are other issues here with this application. But in terms of where we are now, and the point that the Chairman has just made is, well, clearly you are concerned, Councillor Andrews, with the proximity of some of these lodges to the airstrip. but it needs to be distilled to a reason for refusal that we can defend on appeal, if that is the only reason for refusal.
I would add the landscaping reason, Chairman.
Councillor Windrus.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll second Councillor Ryby on the 106 come legal agreement first before we make a decision.
Can I ask, are you supporting Councillor Ryby's application to have it deferred subject to the 106 agreement being drawn up?
Yes.
And brought back to committee?
Yep.
It's not a deferral, is it? It's approval subject to 106.
That would make it an approval subject to 106, not a deferment.
It would be subject to the 106.
But subject to the 106.
Which we bring back here.
Well, I can go with that, yeah.
Councillor Ryby?
I believe that if all the conditions are met, then it meets the planning requirements, and I stand by that.
Thank you for that. So just so that we are all clear in the committee, what we are saying is we are now proposing approval of the application subject to the 106 agreement being drawn up and brought back
and
to committee.
And complied with.
And brought back to committee.
Correct.
But Chair, refusal has also been moved.
Okay, and refusal has also been moved. So we will have two votes. We will have a vote to refuse the application as it stands, and we will have a vote to approve the application subject to a 106 agreement and it coming back to the next committee meeting. Refusal for what reasons? You're saying for the landscape, Councillor Andrews?
And for the proximity to the runway.
And proximity to the runway. Okay, we will do the refusal first, please, members. Members, thank you. Four votes for refusal, three votes against refusal, and one abstention. So the application is refused. Okay, we'll move on to item 9, please, on page 164. This is a application number 19/01059/4. It is Bright Steels Limited, demolition of existing offices and factory buildings and the erection of 4 3-bedroom terrace dwellings and 1 block of 6 number 2-bedroom flats with associated access and parking and landscaping, and that's Beverley Road, Norton, and this one is Neve.
Thank you, Chair. This application site relates to vacant offices, timber hut and factory buildings associated with the Bright Steels business in Norton. The site, as you can see from this photograph, is located on the corner of Wood Street, Little Wood Street and Beverly Road. The current buildings range from approximately 6.75 to 8 metres in height, incorporating a range of materials including stonework, brickwork and corrugated sheeting, currently in a poor state of repair. The buildings are at the moment vacant. The wider locality surrounding the site incorporates predominantly residential and industrial uses, with residential properties adjoining the site to the north and east along Little Wood Street, as illustrated in that photograph, and to the south also. Further land under the ownership of Bright Steels is located to the northwest and west of the application site, with further office buildings to the south. And from this photograph, you can see the other Bright Steels buildings directly to the west of the application site, abutting Beverly Road and Wood Street. This is a view of the site from the southwest, where you can appreciate the timber hut and the buildings that are fronting Beverly Road. And this is another view from the south, where you can see the kind of context of the in-use buildings associated with Bright Steels together with the currently vacant plot. As was noted whenever the application was introduced, we're seeking permission for the demolition of the existing office and factory buildings and the erection of 4 3-bedroom terrace dwellings and a block of 6 2-bedroom flats, with associated access parking and landscaping taken from Beverly Road. There are just other views from around the site. As detailed within the officer's report, the principle of reusing existing land and buildings within the town development limits is considered to be acceptable and in accordance with local policy. The proposed development itself would incorporate the 4 terrace dwellings situated fronting Little Wood Street, and these would provide a real kind of visual continuation of the existing terrace properties along this point. In terms of the overall proportions in heights, in the positioning within the site and materials, albeit with a slightly more modern interpretation. This would include brick, slate roofs and zinc-clad chimney stacks. Each terrace dwelling would incorporate some private amenity space to the rear, and they would also have access to 2 dedicated parking spaces within the rear communal parking area. The proposed 3-storey building would be towards the western part of the site, around here. It would be constructed with the same palette of materials as previously mentioned, and would incorporate the frontage along Little Wood Street with another access to the rear within the private access to the south of the site. There would be 1 car parking space per flat in line with North Yorkshire parking standards, and internal dedicated cycle storage also. Within the rear communal area that would be accessed from Beverly Road, there would be a small area of amenity space for each of the flats. And during the determination of this proposal, this was increased in size. There is a separate dedicated bin storage area also proposed. And the boundary treatment along the western part of the site would include a 2.3 metre high brick built boundary wall. In terms of amenity, as detailed in the report, it's considered that the proposal can be undertaken without any harm to occupiers of adjoining and neighbouring residential properties. Some improvements will be made to the residential amenity of 86 Wood Street, which is the closest property adjoining the site along Little Wood Street. Furthermore, there's conditions recommended in relation to external lighting, the overall method of demolition of these buildings, and the removal of permitted development rights are also recommended. In terms of potential noise impacts for future occupants, careful consideration has been given to this element by officers, our environmental health team, the agents and their noise consultants. There was an initial objection from the council's environmental health team, but following negotiations and additional support and information, as well as improvements made to the wider scheme, this objection has been withdrawn. The improvements that I'd mentioned relate to an improved boundary treatment to the western part of the site. This has been increased to a 2.3 metre high boundary wall that will also be softened with appropriate landscaping, and better boundary treatments to the rear amenity spaces of the terraced dwellings. Furthermore, within the construction of the building, there is a mechanical ventilation and heat recovery system, and that will be secured by planning condition, and the planning condition also relates to specific testing to ensure that this will provide an appropriate level of amenity for future occupiers. That, as you will have seen in the report, was in relation to potential noise concerns as a result of the kind of proximity of the site to the remaining Bright Steels building and the quite busy road ways that are adjoining the site. But it is considered that an appropriate level of amenity can be secured because of this mechanical heat and ventilation system, but also the future occupiers can have the option to use the kind of regular windows when required as well, without any detriment. But fundamentally, what I would say is this site, it is an urban site, and there is more kind of potential for noise issues to crop up. But this particular application presents an opportunity to regenerate currently disused industrial land right in the heart of the town centre of Norton. The preferred use of the site would be residential rather than industrial, and there is the lawful kind of industrial use of the site at the moment. In terms of access and highway safety, North Yorkshire County Council have confirmed that they've overall no objection to the proposal, and they're satisfied with the level of off-street parking provision within the site, and that meets their current standards as well. Electrical vehicle charging points are being provided within the site for the four terraced dwellings, and relevant conditions in relation to that are recommended. As you'll have seen within the report, two letters of response were received, one in support and the other noting no objection to the proposed demolition of the buildings, but raising some concerns in relation to whether parking by contractors could be undertaken without detriment to neighbouring properties and neighbouring residents during the construction phase. It also raised the point of the general level of traffic in what is a very busy town centre location and whether sufficient parking would be provided within the site for future occupiers. But as noted, North Yorkshire County Council were satisfied with the level of parking provision. Appropriate conditions in relation to construction management plan have also been recommended. And the agent has also confirmed that they're confident the site is large enough so that all contractor parking can be undertaken within the site as well. So to conclude, it's considered that this scheme is acceptable in terms of housing policy. The proposal is considered to relate to a high quality and sustainable design, providing modest but sufficient outdoor amenity spaces for all properties. It results in enhancement upon the existing unused industrial site that can have real benefits for the wider street scene within the town and will secure kind of visual improvements. It's not considered that this will relate to harm to residential amenity of existing or future occupiers. And as I've mentioned, our environmental health officers have withdrawn their objection to the proposal. It's also considered that the development can be undertaken without adverse impacts in terms of highway safety, with appropriate levels of off-street parking provision provided. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We do have a speaker, Mr. Stone, if Mr. Stone is here. you'd like to come forward, Mr. Stone, and take a seat. It's the large button at the bottom. You've got 3 minutes, and I'll remind you at 30 seconds to the end that you've got that much time left. Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Chair, councillors, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure to sit here before you this evening to endorse this housing scheme on behalf of Bright Steels. The family-owned business is 100 years old and employs approximately 75 people. The business is firmly rooted in Norton, supporting multiple generations of family, some with some incredible employment statistics for long service. Bright Steels is the largest producer of bright drawn steel in England and one of the largest in Europe, which not many people realise. The good news is that the development of this site will not alter any of the aforementioned facts. This site has been surplus to requirements for a number of years because of 21st century production techniques, and demand has evolved. This brownfield site offers a great central location for 10 new homes in the centre of Norton. The proposed design is intended to strengthen the identity of the corner of Beverley Road and Little Wood Street. Norton Town Council have been very supportive, and the statutory consultees are all in support of the scheme. In particular, the police secured by design officers were very complimentary, and very detailed acoustic design has met the satisfaction of the EHOs. This scheme will deliver 4 terraced houses and 6 well-serviced energy-efficient apartments, complete with off-street parking, including electric car charging points. The proposed scheme is a sustainable reuse of a brownfield site. The production of Bright Steel is not affected, and the family and company would very much like to see this site delivered as good quality housing to support the local community. Thank you very much.
I'll open it up for questions from members. Councillor Andrew.
Has Norton Town Council replied, Chair? I mean, if it's there, I haven't been able to find it.
I'll help you out, Niamh. Councillor McKenzie.
Yeah, I can confirm that Norton Town Council did support this for approval.
Councillor. My only question and reservation is about traffic and parking during the construction phase, because it will be particularly difficult, I believe, for residents in the area. And I know it's part of the construction management scheme, but is there an opportunity to park the vehicles, contractor vehicles, somewhere else other than on the street?
That was one of the points that I'd followed up with the agent during the consideration of this proposal, as it was highlighted within the letter of comment from a neighbouring occupier. And the agent had confirmed in an email in early January that they're confident that the site is large enough so that all contractor parking, along with material, plant and welfare, could be contained within the site. But that will also be subject to a discharge of conditions application, where that will be formalised. But I think if there was any concerns about that during a kind of construction phase, I understand that Bright Steels does have other land within the immediate area as well, but in the first instance I've been advised that it will suitably be contained within the application site itself.
Okay, thank you for that. Thank you. I'll open it up to debate. The local member is Councillor McKenzie, so if you'd like to take this one, Councillor McKenzie.
Thank you, Chair. If you've not already had a look on page 191, it shows you the development as it would look. It's an area that I'm very, very familiar with, and when you see the
current building, which has not been used, it's in a very poor state of repair, and quite frankly, it spoils the look of the rest of Little Wood Street, which is residential. And if you looked at page 191, you would see that the way this development has been thought out very well, it really does fit in with the rest of those terraced houses. There's a lot going for it. It's got electric charging points for cars, ample parking, and I move that we recommend approval.
Councillor Andrews.
Second that, Chair. I won't say any more.
Anyone else? From the Chair, I do think it's a really good development. I like the look on the plans, and I think with 10 new properties of this size will be ideal in Norton, so I'm happy to support my colleagues. It has been moved and seconded for approval, so if we'd like to go to the vote, members. Thank you, members. The vote is unanimous, subject to conditions. It's approved. Item 10 on the agenda, members, is deferred, so we'll move straight on to item 11, which is on page 214 of the agenda, if you bear with me. And this is application number 19/01274 Major Full. This is the demolition of agricultural buildings and the erection of a maintenance building with associated service yard, garage and storage bays. This is at the land adjacent to Glebe Court, Kirby Misperton, for Flamingo Land. And the officer, I think, is Alan. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The application in front of members for item 11 is reported to Planning Committee for determination on the basis that the proposed buildings exceed 1,000 square metres in footprint. Therefore, it constitutes a major development application. There are no objections to the proposal, and there are no updates to the report as published. So I'll just run through a series of photos of the application site. The application site is land within Flamingo Land Theme Park and Zoo. This is on the western side of Kirby Misperton Village. The entrance to the theme park is off this aerial photo. It's approximately 300 metres to the east of the application site. So the application site roughly involves this area here. So this is a parcel of land with agricultural buildings which stand to the north of Glebe Court and Glebe Court Farmhouse. All of these buildings within this area are under the control and ownership of the applicant. So the nearest residential receptor, Schoolhouse Court, is under the control of the applicant. The property, the Glebe Court properties, are currently unoccupied and were previously used for staff accommodation by Flamingo Land. So the application would involve the demolition of a Dutch barn, which is on the western side of the application site, which is currently used for storage purposes by the maintenance team. The purpose of the application is the applicant is looking to consolidate service and maintenance arrangements to one part of the site. At present, there's various bases around the theme park which are used by electricians, plumbers, joiners, etc., involved in the maintenance of the site. To the west of this is outside of the application site is an existing building which is used for the construction of garden furniture and sheds. And there is a public right-of-way which runs south to north, and that is 100 metres west of the application site. Access to the application site would be through the main gates of the theme park or within the theme park via the existing internal access road. So this is a photo of that internal access road. This is facing northeast, and in the background off towards the left hand side you can see the theme park itself. And also in this photo you can see advanced planting that has gone in. This is actually outside the application site, but there is tree planting that's gone in to the north of the application site. So panning round eastward, this is the northern boundary of the application site. So on the plans, there is additional planting would go in along here. And panning round southward, this is the northern elevation of the Dutch barn, which would be removed and replaced with the maintenance building. In the background, you can see Glebe Court. This is a close-up of the Dutch barn. As you can see, it's used for general storage by the maintenance team. And off to the right-hand side is Glebe Court, the properties there. This is facing northwest from within the application site. So the proposed building, the main building, would be roughly twice the width of the Dutch barn, and in terms of height, slightly higher, but generally similar in terms of its bulk. And this area to the east of the building would be a fenced yard area, and the main roller shutter doors into the maintenance building would be on the eastern elevation facing onto that yard. So just panning round, you can see, you might just be able to make out in that photo, there is some ad hoc storage of theme park paraphernalia and various bits that have, are in storage. The site is, it probably does need a bit of TLC, and the idea is the application would look to tidy things up and formalise the maintenance hub for Flamingo Land. This is facing west, and this wall here is the wall of the boundary with the cemetery. So the cemetery is beyond that. In this area, as shown on the plans, there would be a 10-metre wide buffer standoff from the cemetery, and there would be additional landscape planting that would go in along that boundary. And the properties at Schoolhouse Court, that's just the back of the property there. So panning round, this is the southern boundary of the site with planting that's parallel to Kirby Misperton Road. On the right hand side, that's the Glebe Court. And panning round, you can just see that those buildings, as I say, are not currently occupied, previously used for staff accommodation, but are in a relatively dilapidated condition at the moment. This photo is taken to the north of the application site, facing towards, as shown on the earlier aerial photo, a shed, an existing shed to the west of the site. In terms of the external appearance of the largest building on the western side of the application site, the external materials, such as timber cladding, would not depart a great deal from that agricultural building. This is facing, this is stood north of the application site, facing northwest towards the public right of way, which runs along here. And the land does fall away in a northerly direction. So views from, I mean, the public right of way isn't, from looking at it, isn't in a great deal of use. It's quite overgrown and neglected. There is a significant hedgerows on both sides, which would serve to screen views towards the application site. And also the change in topography and the intervening land would partially screen the buildings. And then finally, just panning round, this is facing back towards the theme park, and obviously there's quite a number of high, tall structures in that area. So the report itself, the Dutch barn, which stands within the application site, is clearly in a dilapidated condition. And there are no formal garaging on site for maintenance vehicles or storage space for materials. At present, various workshops are spaced around the park and there is a need to consolidate operations and provide larger, improved facilities. It is considered that the proposed development is acceptable in principle and aligns with the general aims of policy SP6 in terms of employment and policy SP8 in relation to the development of tourism in the district, as the centralised service hub would support the efficient functioning of this tourist attraction. The proposed buildings have a substantial footprint, which is dictated by the functional requirements. The overall height of the larger of the two buildings is comparable to the existing Dutch barn, and the outward elevations to the north and west are not dissimilar to the adjacent agricultural building. Views from the public right of way would be partially screened by the change in topography and intervening planting. The siting and scale is compatible with the existing buildings, and landscape buffers would be provided to the north and east, therefore resulting in a minimal impact on the open countryside. The nearest residential properties are under the applicant's ownership, and the adjacent courtyard has been used as staff accommodation but is currently unoccupied. The proposed building would face onto an enclosed yard, and recommended conditions numbers 9 to 12 on page 219 of the agenda would control the use of the buildings and the yard to ensure residential amenity is not adversely affected. Those conditions include controls on external lighting. That would require the prior submission of details on all external lighting, as you would anticipate there would be lighting within the yard, and given its sensitive location and elevated position, that will need to be controlled. There are no issues in terms of highways or ecological impact. In conclusion, the proposal is supported by policies in relation to employment and tourism, and the buildings would be partly sited on previously developed land within the development limits of the theme park. It is therefore recommended that planning permission is granted, subject to the 12 conditions as listed in the report.
Thank you very much, Alan. We do have a speaker, Mr. Holbeck, who is the agent. Mr. Holbeck, if you would like to take a seat, it's the large button at the bottom. You've 3 minutes, and I'll give you a prompt when you've got 30 seconds left.
Thank you, Chair. I don't actually think we need all of the 3 minutes. We originally registered to speak on this application as a precaution. However, we're comfortable that the officer update and the committee report itself covers all of the relevant issues. We're happy with the proposed planning conditions, so I don't think that we've got anything meaningful to add. Thank you.
I'll open it for questions, Councillor Andrew.
One, Chair. Have the Parish Council responded? Have they commented on this application?
No response has been received.
Councillor Joy Andrew.
I couldn't see anything wrong with this. I just wanted for clarification. When the first map you showed us, it's going to be accessed from the Flamingo Land site. Is there a road through to get onto through Glebe Court onto the Kirby Muspitton Road?
There is. There is an access in this position here, which serves the farmhouse. And also into the Glebe Court. There is actually also an access roughly here, which is very overgrown, but it would actually lead along the eastern side of Glebe Court. But the applicant has confirmed there's no intention for any maintenance service vehicles. It would be from within the park.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions, I'll throw it open to debate, but I'm not sure we have a local member. Councillor Andrews.
Yeah, I live near there. I can't see this building is going to do any harm whatsoever. I would propose it for the reasons that the officers have given, and I propose approval.
Councillor McKenzie.
Yep, it seems a common sense way to go. They're bringing all their maintenance together, and I would like to second Councillor Andrews' motion.
Thank you very much, members. It's moved and seconded for approval. If you care to go to the vote. Thank you. Thank you, members. That's unanimous. And the application is approved, subject to conditions. Thank you very much, members. Moving on to item 12, which is on page 240 of the agenda. This is application number 19/01110/full. It is the change of use of a farmstead, conversion, extensions and alterations of barns and outbuildings to form a wedding venue, to include the creation of guest accommodations, ceremony room and reception room with associated parking and landscape, and that's Bridge House Farm, Main Street, Norrenby. And I think it's Alan again. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Chair. Just before I proceed with the presentation of the photos and slides for this one, just an update on the content of the officer report. As members will have noted, in the recommendation there's reference to an outstanding response from the Environment Agency in relation to flood risk. That response has now been received. They have reviewed the revised flood risk assessment and have confirmed that there are no objections on flood risk grounds, and recommend an additional condition, which is one of their standard conditions, which requires that if approval is granted, that the development is carried out in accordance with the flood risk assessment, including the mitigation measures, which were the increase in finished floor levels, flood-proof doors, and flood-resilient measures. So, in terms of the application site itself, I've got the aerial photo of the site and surrounding area. Some of the labels might not be all that clear, but I'll just run through them. The application site is here, and it includes the actual red line does include the farmhouse, modern agricultural buildings to the north, and the various traditional agricultural buildings within the centre of the site and to the eastern side. There are actually listed barns within the site, which I will come on to. The purpose of this aerial photo is just to illustrate where the site sits in relation to the rest of the village, i.e. Normanby, and the nearest residential receptors. Also, just to highlight, the River Severn runs to the west of the site, and access is gained to the site from Bath Lane, and the access is on the corner there. The village of Normanby is off to the northwest here. So the nearest residential properties, which are referred to in the report in terms of those who've raised objections and concerns, include Chapel Cottage, which is 160 metres from the boundary of the application site, Barn Farm and Granary Barn, 160 metres from the site, Barn Farm Cottage is 190 metres away, Westfield House 200 metres, Westfield Lodge further to the south, and Westfield Farm, which is approximately 360 metres from the application boundary. So the site is set within the open countryside, and as you can see, the surrounding land is predominantly in agricultural use to the north, east and south. The next aerial photo is a close-up of the application site, just to highlight the main areas of work involved in this application. It is quite a substantial redevelopment of the site that is proposed, and I must admit, in showing you the photos, you will require a degree of imagination to see how these buildings are going to be modernised. First of all, block one is a grade two listed barn, which does include very dilapidated barns, which are without roofs, as I'll show in the photos. The main farmhouse itself is grade two listed. That would not be affected by any physical works on site, although its impact on the impact of the works on its setting have been considered. As mentioned, the access is in this position here. Buildings on the western side would be demolished. The car parking would be to the north, between the existing modern agricultural sheds, 35 spaces in this area here, and overflow parking for 20 spaces in this area. Block one would comprise the guest accommodation for the wedding venue. Block two would also comprise guest accommodation, including the bridal suite. Block three, which is a large covered fold yard, would be converted to form the main reception hall for the wedding. And what I've also shown on this aerial photo is the yellow blocks illustrate the approximate locations of extensions. So the conversion works largely relate to the existing footprint of buildings, and there are no substantial demolition works proposed. So on the southern side of what would be the reception hall, there would be an extension for a peach house, which is shown on the visualisations. It's page 272, 275, 276 of the agenda, a series of 3D images of how it would appear. To the north would be an extension to provide a link to block four, and also kitchens and toilets. The eastern side of this building would be the bar, and then there would be breakout space on the western side here, and a breakout space to the south of the peach house. Block four would be the ceremony room, where the actual service would take place. So photos of the site. This is looking northwest towards the entrance to the site. The road bends here, and then there is a dip in the road as it heads towards the bridge over the river. This is facing roughly southward from the entrance, showing visibility, and facing eastward towards the bridge. This photo is facing north into the site. On the right-hand side, you can see the main farmhouse. In the centre, there is the Grade 2 listed barns, which are referred to as Block 1. And on this side, these are the outbuildings that would be demolished. In the background, you can see the modern farm sheds. So this area between the sheds would be the parking area for the guests. That's a photo of the west-facing elevation of the listed farmhouse, which would be unaffected by the works. So moving on to block one, this is the guest accommodation. This is all Grade 2 listed. It comprises four separate buildings that are all attached. As you can see, there has been recent works to repair the roof or replace the roof, but the rest of the building is in significant disrepair, as you can see, without a roof. It isn't actually listed. We've done a check. It's not listed on Historic England's at-risk register, believe it or not. But there is history whereby our planning conservation officer has previously been involved in urgent works to repair buildings, and this is going back some years. So this is within still the listed barns. This would be the guest accommodation. As described in the report and shown on the elevation drawings, within this area there would be a structure built within the walls of the listed building, as they hope to... there is a structural survey to show that in its current form it's not in great condition, but they would like to keep as much of the historic external fabric as possible. So there would be an internal shell, and it's referred to as the roof that wraps over the top, which would have a rust red effect. It's shown on the visualisations attached to the report. This is on the northern side of block one. Again, these buildings would be retained, converted and altered to form guest accommodation. And again, these are part of the listed building. On this side, these structures are of limited heritage value, but are listed for their group value. So this is facing back out of the site, the southern elevation of those listed barns. So block two is, it has recently been used as holiday let accommodation. This would be converted, the footprint would remain as it is, and this building would include the bridal suite in this area. So this is facing, looking back to block two. In the background you can see block one. Block three is the probably the most significant area of works. This is stood within the courtyard, facing towards the east, the western side of the reception hall, and this would be a breakout space. These doors would be installed that would open out into a breakout space in the central courtyard. This is panning round, facing towards the southern boundary, and again the footprint of these buildings would be retained and converted. This photo is taken from the eastern side of the site, looking back towards the fold yard with its corrugated roof, curved corrugated roof. That would be replicated. There would be a new roof installed here, and it would look to follow the same form of that roof. And this brick-built block on the eastern side, this would be converted to form the bar area that would serve the reception. So this photo is taken within the fold yard. This is the area, this would be the main ceremony hall. So for a wedding event, this is where everyone would be sat down for their meal, etc. And this is facing towards what would be a bar area here. This photo is taken to the southwest of the site, facing the southern elevation of block three. So along here is where the peach house would be constructed, with openings onto a grassed area. So it would be constructed here with openings onto this area here. This, on the left-hand side of this photo, this would remain part of the domestic curtilage to serve the farmhouse. Moving on to block four, this is a two-storey building with an external staircase, which does have this roof link to block one. This building would be converted to form the ceremony room. Again, this is extremely dilapidated with the roof collapsed at the eastern end of the building. And this is the building from the other side. Just panning around there. And finally, this is a photo taken from within the fold yard, so within what would be block three. Within the noise management plan, there is reference to a barn door which would be closed during the night event, during any live music inside the building or any music, and that door would be in this position. But this photo, it just shows how sort of compact that courtyard is, with block two immediately in front, the gable end of block one, and block four, the ceremony room here. So within the report, in terms of noise mitigation, one of the observations is that within this part of the site, any external noise would be contained within the courtyard, and mitigation would be provided by the two-storey buildings. So let's go back to the aerial photo. So in terms of the report itself, the principle of the proposed development is supported by planning policy in relation to farm diversification, rural economic activity and employment, conversion and reuse of redundant traditional buildings, and the repair and conservation of listed buildings. The Council has a statutory duty to have special regard for the preservation of listed buildings, and as illustrated by the photos of Block 1, the listed barns are in a serious state of disrepair and partial collapse. The Building Conservation Officer welcomes the proposed development, including the contemporary interventions that seek to retain the historic fabric of the building. Overall, the conversion, alterations and extensions are considered sympathetic to the existing buildings, and there would be no significant demolition work. The overall footprint and form is largely retained, and the repairs and reconstruction works would enhance the setting of the listed farmhouse. In terms of amenity, local residential amenity, a number of concerns have been raised by local residents and the parish council, primarily in relation to noise disturbance. As requested by the environmental health officer, a noise management plan has been produced and is summarised in the report. The restrictions on the use are to be secured by planning conditions. The main activity would be concentrated on the eastern part of the site. It is considered that the separation distances and intervening features, the arrangement of buildings within the site and frequency of events serve to reduce the overall impact. The noise management plan will be implemented and subject of annual review. The EHO is satisfied with the proposed controls and that they will reduce the noise impact to a suitable level. In terms of highways impact, some local residents have raised concerns in relation to traffic movements, road safety and parking provision. The venue would be self-contained and is detached from the village. The use of the venue would avoid traffic movements during peak periods. There were no objections from the highways, subject to the inclusion of a travel plan to be submitted under condition and the widening of the site access and maintenance of visibility splays. Flood risk has been mentioned. There is mitigation that is proposed and the Environment Agency are satisfied with those proposals. So in conclusion, it's considered that the development is supported by policies SP6 and SP9 and it would create employment opportunities. It would also mean that there are heritage benefits arising from the restoration of listed buildings. The highways residential amenity and flood risk impacts can be suitably managed and controlled by conditions. It is therefore recommended that planning permission is granted subject to the 28 conditions as listed in the report, plus the addition of the condition requested by the Environment Agency.
Thank you very much. We do have two speakers on this application. Joe Bradley, who is Parish Council. If you care to come forward, Mr. Bradley, take a seat. It's the large button at the bottom. You've got 3 minutes to make your presentation, and I'll give you an audible warning, 30 seconds at the end. Thank you.
Good evening. My name's Joe Bradley. I'm the chair of the parish meeting. The application to develop Bridge House Farm has caused a huge debate amongst the residents of Normandy, both positively and negatively. For everyone's benefit, Normandy is a small hamlet of 67 homes, 130 people live in it, and it's 3 miles south of Kirby Moorside. It is a very rural environment. We first discussed the application at a parish meeting on the 24th of October. It was a lively event with much discussion. There was definitely a large number of residents who were opposed to the application, and there was a large number of residents who supported or had a neutral view of the application. During this meeting, a vote was taken with 7 residents objecting and 17 residents supporting or had a neutral position. It was agreed that individuals would comment on the application itself, and the parish, I would comment on that. We had 6 conditions that we wanted to be taken into consideration. More overflow parking, the alcohol license to be limited to 11 o'clock at night, all music to cease by 11 o'clock, no outside music, no fireworks or lanterns, and funding for a pathway to the venue from the village should be considered. We had then had another meeting last night in the very cold church in Normandy. It was a positive meeting in terms of a number of us came to a conclusion on a consensus. I think the main consideration was all residents agreed that all music, both live and other music, should cease at 11 p.m, which is contrary to one of the recommendations. Anthony and Julie Gill, who are the applicants, who attended last night's meeting, also approved this request. We don't want any outside music at all to take place. No alcohol should be served after 11 o'clock. All non-residents depart from site by 12 noon. We consider the off-site parking not to be adequate enough. We think we need more spaces. where residents all raised concerns about the noise management plan, but we believe the installation of a noise limiter unit would be very useful to be considered. We believe the enforcement of the noise management plan has to be more rigorous. A number of residents asked for a site visit, and the enforcement of the 40 events per year has to be transparent. I do believe the above points represent the general views of the residents of the parish, and therefore, by default, these must be strongly considered by the Planning Committee.
We also have an objector to speak, Shirley Child. If you'd like to come forward. It's the large button at the bottom. Oh, it's already on. Don't worry about it. You've got 3 minutes to make your presentation. I'll give you a warning, 30 seconds from the end. Okay. Thank you. Good. Sorry. You've turned it off.
Thank you.
Noise and disturbance from live music in the afternoon until 5 p.m, followed by music until after midnight. Noise from guests when leaving late at night, loud noises, voices, car doors and vehicle movements. We ask for all noise to cease at 11 p.m. Normanby Parish Meeting has also requested an 11 p.m. stop time. The Noise Management Plan addresses the problems in detail. 5.4 promises an annual review, which is welcomed. However, 5.5 merely states that any updates to the noise management plan should be done in consultation with Rydal District Council. The recommended conditions 19 and 20 are too loose. 19 allows music to continue till 12:30. As worded, this finishing time would stand even if the noise management plan is amended to require an earlier time. We firstly ask that the time be changed to 11 p.m. in line with current restrictions enforced on other local businesses. 11 p.m. was originally suggested on 18th of December by the Council's Senior Environmental Health Specialist. Secondly, I ask that the wording be changed in order to retain flexibility. This might be done by adding the words, or such other time as required by the local planning authority. Condition 21 requires the venue to be operated in accordance with the management plan. It refers to the provision for annual review, but does not require amendments to be adopted. We ask for such a requirement by adding the conditions, the words, it is a requirement of the consent that the review of the noise management plan is done in consultation with the local planning authority and that such amendments be incorporated in the noise management plan. We would welcome the fitting of a noise limiter so that the power switches off if the noise levels are exceeded, plus the inclusion of a very significant hedge, tree and shrub planting plan as part of noise reduction from the site. The adequacy of parking for the proposed number of guests and staff is of real concern. We would ask that 80 all-weather parking places to be put in place to ensure parking does not spill into the village, which has no capacity to support overflow. The frequency of 40 events a year is also a real concern. Nearby Deepdale Farm is only allowed to host 25 events yearly. We would ask that such a number be a start point for this planning application. We welcome the development of new businesses in the area, which will be a benefit to our rural community.
30 seconds.
However, this proposal for the development of an events venue will offer limited gain to the residents of the village or surrounding areas. The owner freely states that the intention to lease the buildings only for the event, therefore outside contractors will be providing catering, bar, entertainment, etc. We appeal to the committee to consider the negative impact this development will have on the quality of life of residents and already established businesses in the village. This proposal in no way respects the character of the area. Please could the committee take these points into account.
Thank you very much. Alan, do you want to come back on any of those points?
Thank you, Chair. Just to comment on a couple of those observations. In terms of the annual review, there is the condition 21. The applicant has committed to reviewing their noise management plan. The wording can be amended to require the submission of their review and any updates to the authority for consultation with the parish council and environmental health officer. That would apply to all other conditions in terms of the limit on hours. That obviously that's within the gift of members to adjust if they see fit. The comment in relation to the alcohol licence, that falls under separate legislation, so that wouldn't be covered by the planning permission. The comment on landscaping, there is a landscaping condition, and we would be able to review that. And the on-site parking, the Highways Authority is satisfied with the parking provision on site. It has been shown on the site layout plans as parking within this area here and here, although I suspect in reality there would be scope to park within these barns, staff parking, etc., you know, in those open barns as shown in the photos. But the Highways Authority has not got any highway safety concerns, or the that they aren't worried that it would result in vehicles parking on the public highway.
I'll open it up for questions from members. Councillor Joy Andrews.
Thank you. Yeah, page 252 of the agenda. Point 18, no live amplified music should be played within the venue later than 11 p.m. And then point 19, all music within the venue shall cease by 12:30 a.m. If it's not live or amplified, does that include disco, or is it just going to be acoustic after 11?
My understanding of those conditions, which have come out as a result of consultation with the Environmental Health Officer, is that the limit on 11 o'clock would relate to things such as live bands, whereas the additional hour and a half would be the disco associated with the wedding party.
Right. Just from my point of view, I mean, I manage an amenity that does live music and does that, and discos can be as loud as live bands, especially when it's got some bass to it, and you can hear it. Yeah, it does travel a great deal, and I'm in the centre of town, and I'm all for keeping music live and having live bands. I think it's really important that, you know, within pubs, towns, and if you're offering a venue for a wedding, etc., that live music should be played. And I think 11 o'clock is late enough. But it's a bit of a contradiction, the whole sort of, because live or amplified music, amplified is disco. So I don't think really... I think that needs looking at. Thank you.
I think, Councillor Andrews, you've got a point there. I would have taken disco music as amplified. It's amplified sound. So I think that's how I would have interpreted that, personally. Yeah. The music within the valley to cease by 12:30, I would have suggested probably was an acoustic sort of thing. But if you're right, it does need clarification. I think one of the speakers, I can't remember which one of the speakers it was, said that apparently there'd been in a meeting last night where there was an agreement to 11 o'clock. That isn't something that's come back through us, so we need to clarify that. But if members have a view on that tonight, it would be nice to know it, and then we can clarify that position.
It's my point sort of linked to this as well. I think these... machines that you can get to cut the music out if it goes above a certain decibel are a bit party poopish as well, really, because I know when we've been at live venues and live music has been played, you know, my children are playing live bands, and you suddenly are getting into the spirit, and then suddenly you realise you've gone above a certain level and it cuts out. So I you know, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that bit of it, but definitely the 11.
Anyone else? I want to raise two questions, and both of which I suspect are not within our gift, because I'm a bit like the residents. We've got a venue that will take up to 120 guests and 60 car parking spaces for the day, but then the potential to have 150 guests, but no more car parking. And that for me is a difficulty, because there is really nowhere, I know that road really well, there is really nowhere locally that you could park, so that there has to be additional parking provided within the site itself. And also, one of the things that it looks fairly clear, it's a really tight S-bend, and the topography of that piece of road is really poor. From a visual point of view, that land rises away, so you can't see what's coming over the hill as you approach that corner. So I have real issues about the safety of that entrance and exit. And I know you're going to say it's highways, and I know that, but those are real issues that I have an issue with.
I think, Chairman, clearly we have to be guided by what the Highway Authority is telling us. It seems clear to me that there is clearly scope for more parking on the site if members felt that it was necessary. I think we all sort of envisage how, you know, if you've been to a wedding with 100 odd guests there, that people are going in twos and threes in cars or whatever, or taking taxis or the like, and in that location, this is clearly making a situation where if there was 120 there of a day, then the maximum attendees could only result in another 30 arriving of an evening. So how or where would they park, and how are they likely to come? I mean, that's showing 55 spaces now, I guess, quite easily, as Alan's identified, within the barn, if it was created a space or a bigger area between the barns and going to the rear, to whatever number you might consider to be necessary. It's a difficult one because my perception is that a lot of people go to weddings in twos and threes in cars or share taxis because nobody wants to drive home. It's the way it is, isn't it? You know, you want to go to a wedding to enjoy yourself and not be obviously being able to have a drink and drive. But it's we just have to be guided by the Highway Authority, I suppose, and they've looked at this and they tend to err on the side of caution. Is what I would say, but we're in your hands.
Councillor Andrew. Yeah.
Just, you were flicking through the photographs there, and the actual access, can two vehicles pass going through that gate, or is it if one was coming out and one going in?
The highway's conditions does include access widening works would be required.
Any further questions? If not, I'll open it up for debate. The local member, I think, should be Councillor Clark.
Oh, sorry, he did actually send his apologies. He's still caring for Mrs. Clark.
Okay.
Oh, no, it's not Mrs. Clark. She'd kill him. His wife. He's not wife. He's, yes, I don't know. Yes,
okay.
He's been. Yes.
Right.
So, and he did want to speak on this. I think he had concerns. I'm going to get myself in all sorts of trouble. He has concerns about the noise was his big issue, but obviously he can't speak on that. So,
I'm going to throw it open to debate, and if someone wants to pick it up, I will happily let them pick it up. Nobody wants to pick it up. So on that basis, I'll kick it off. I think in principle, it's a great idea to diversify these buildings and turn them into a good use. And I think there's an opportunity to provide a really good venue for weddings. However, I do have concerns. I have concerns about the number of car parking spaces. I've got concerns about the visual displays given the topography of the highway. And actually, I do have concerns about the noise. And if as was suggested, the owners have agreed to an 11 o'clock finish for music, I think we've got to go back and look at that and get that agreement so that the local community can be assured that music will stop at 11 o'clock at night and not have the peace and quiet interrupted. But that's just my view.
Chairman, I think if members are of a review as a committee that you think what we're seeing there is condition 18 is where you are, then you don't need condition 19. You just say, right, no live amplified music should be, no music, live music, live amplified music or whatever shall be played within the venue after 11. And if that's where you are, it seems to me that the parish, I'm not sure if the chairman or the parish representative was there and had that meeting, that the chairman would have got that discussion wrong.
Yeah.
sadly, we haven't got the applicant or the agent here tonight. Sorry? They are. Oh, right, okay. Nobody's nodding heads or shaking their heads. Things come out of the debate that you know, that's what you debate. That's why things are brought to committee for you to deliberate on areas of potential disagreement or refinement of the application.
Thank you for that. And given that there's no local member and nobody else appears to want to take this in their hands, I'm going to move approval, but I'm going to say music till 11 o'clock. And I really would like to see some extra car parking, but that's just me. I've moved it from the chair. Councillor McKenzie.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and I'd like to second that motion.
Thank you very much. So members, it's been moved and seconded for approval. If you would care to go to the vote, thank you. Members, thank you for that. That's 8-4-1 abstention, so the application is approved subject to conditions and the changes that the committee have asked for. Thank you. Members, if we move on to item 13 on the agenda, it is the erection of a replacement four-bedroom dwelling with associated landscaping. That's Wald House, Langton Road, Norton. And I think it's Mr. Housden.
Predicted we might be late in the evening, and after Wombleton Airfield, I thought Ms. Barman might need to wrap a cold, wet towel around her head by now. Thank you. I'll just show you some photographs first, Chairman, very quickly. As I say, the reason this application is actually before you tonight is because of an objection we'd received from the Town Council. The Town Council had objected to the design approach of this replacement dwelling, which they felt was out of keeping with the adjacent buildings. When I show you the pictures of the adjacent buildings, you might be mightily relieved it's out of keeping with some of the adjacent buildings, but that's neither here nor there. In all seriousness, on the site frontage, there are some traditional buildings, but in between then, there are some rather more unattractive modern agricultural buildings, and this the existing bungalow sits next to that. So this is the access to the site. It's located just outside of the built-up area of the town. This is the entrance to the site looking southwards along Langton Road, and this is the view looking back the other way, back towards the town, so you get an impression that you're out of town just a little bit because you're in that sort of treed and hedgerowed part of the road beyond Bayes's Lane, so you're out in a bit more of the open countryside. And this is the entrance in between the frontage buildings. You just get a feel for what they're like, the slate roof with the traditional sort of Norton brick. And the entrance to the site goes through and to the rear. The actual existing bungalow is behind these more modern buildings at the back of the site. And as you progress to the rear, here's another even more modern building here. And at this moment in time, the bungalow, I would say, is not only inhabitable, but it's in a bit of a state. So the residents are currently residing in this lodge whilst a decision's made on this current application. And you'll note that the recommended conditions tie up with the removal of the lodge building. That's the existing bungalow. So you can see it's not a thing of great beauty. But what you do, trying to be polite here, but what you get a feel for as you're standing and looking in between the buildings on the site is that the land rises to the south, so you're in that gently undulating landscape. And in fact, further to the rear, beyond the paddock, the land rises up again, and the public right of way coming out of Norton comes along between the buildings and then goes up. So you get some views back over across towards the site, which I'll refer you to in the agenda papers. So again, even within the site, there are changes in levels, so there are subtle differences in levels. This is a view of the paddock beyond the bungalow, so the public right of way, the nearest public right of way, comes in between some existing buildings here and then rises up into this area here. So you can, from that public right of way, see the group of farm buildings. This is looking back the other way, and again, the side of the mobile. And again, just views out southwards towards the gently rolling hills, but there are some subtle undulations there. And this is a view back towards the bungalow. As you see, you're already, even though you're quite close to the bungalow, you're already in a slightly lower part of the site. And this is the nearest building, which is a thing of not great beauty. In fact, in terms of landscape impact, it's actually quite obtrusive because you see it against a green background, so it's very bright and obtrusive. And that's another view just from further from the southwestern corner. This building would be demolished and the new dwelling would go in this area here. The building, as you'll have seen from the pictures on and the plans on the agenda, is actually on two levels at this side of the site. So there's a slight reduction in ground levels here. So there is two levels here, but on ground level at the front of the site. So it's taking advantage of the landform. And this is, again, back towards the public right-of-way, back across the paddock. So you get a feel for how the site sort of sits in a slight dip but then rises back up again. And this is a view between that most modern of the buildings on the site and the side wall of the bungalow, again, giving you an impression of how the land rises and falls. What I thought was a useful reference point for this photo application was the submitted design and access statement, and referencing to that on page, if I find the right page, Chairman, I think it's on page 351. I'll just quickly get to that. It's the Spofforth document, but what that does show is the 341. 341 shows the artist's impression of the actual building, which has got this green roof and curved form. The architect's inspirations have taken from the landscape and the curving hillsides. But on page 342, you can see a view which is pretty much taken from the adjacent public right-of-way further to the west. So you're looking back across the site to the bungalow and the farm building beyond it, which, as you say, because it's a light colour, really actually does stand out quite a lot. One of the saving graces, I think, that the new scheme will actually obscure a bit more of that building than the current bungalow. I think it's worth saying that although the proposed building is a larger building, it actually isn't any taller in profile in landscape terms. So in that sense, if you're able to look at page 338, and I do apologise for the size of that, but if you're able to enlarge that picture outwards, you can see the profile of the nearest buildings, and this curved roof form in the centre of that section is actually significantly lower than the adjacent farm building, so it sort of sits into the ground. All in all, we're quite happy with the design approach and the materials proposed. And the building actually has got some fairly good environmental credentials which you'll probably have already picked up from the report. So so we recommend approval, Chairman.
Members, we've got no speakers, so I'll open it up for questions to the officers. Councillor Andrews.
Just looking at this picture on page 341, is it timber or is it brick? Or is it concrete?
The walls are mainly timber clad, Chairman, but there are some quite extensive areas of glazing. The roof is a green roof.
That means green plants.
Green plants.
If there are no other questions, I'll open it up for debate. The local member is Councillor McKenzie.
Thank you, Chair. This is a difficult one for me because I saw at first hand the very strong objections for the majority of Norton Town Council. I will stress the majority. Okay. But I don't sit here as a representative of Norton Town Council, and I've looked very carefully at this and read it. And I honestly cannot see any valid reason, planning reason, to refuse it. In fact, my own view is it's the sort of building that we should be encouraging in Rydale. Having said that, I would like to hear what other members have to say. Thank you.
Councillor Andrews.
Well, Chair, it might be modern looking, it might be eco. It might have all sorts of things going in its favour, and it might look a little bit better than the building that's there already. But it looks like an aircraft hangar. It's totally out of character. The principle of having a you cannot argue, Chair, with the principle of replacing the bungalow with something else. You cannot argue about that. But that, it has nothing going for it, which in the least bit sort of harmonises it or makes it fit in with the local townscape or landscape roundabout Norton. And I totally agree with Norton Town Council. I think it's absolutely right. It should be refused. Not for the principle of a new house there, but just for the design. It's awful.
Councillor Joy Andrews.
I completely disagree with Councillor Andrews. I think it's a fantastic building. I think it lends itself to the landscape. I think we're probably so used to seeing boxes with red brick or stone and chimneys and that, and I think this is very innovative and forward thinking, and I think rather than refuse, I think we should be encouraging people to build more of these kind of buildings within Rydale. Thank you.
My comment from the chair is this. I think it has the potential to sit well in the landscape. I like the use of a green roof and the timber cladding. I think it's more than comparable in design with the recently approved Para 79 house at Ampleforth, which was far more contentious than this one. And frankly, I really think we should be getting on and approving it. Councillor McKenzie.
Yeah, I'll second that.
I'll move it then. Members, it's moved and seconded for approval. Please make your vote. Thank you, members. That's 8 votes for and 1 against. It is approved subject to conditions. Thank you. Thank you, members. Item 14, page 373. I think this is to do with the Lapton generating plant.
Yes, Chairman. It's actually a consultation via the Secretary of State for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy, and it relates to the retention of the generating station and the section of overhead line that links the generating station to the grid, as set out in the report. You'll see that the recommendation that we'd made in the report was essentially based really on the recommendation that we'd previously made to the 8 applications to the County Council in relation to the extension of the well sites, which were being proposed to be extended for a further 17 years. And it was really the gist of that response is set out on page 375 onto 376, where Jill Thompson has repeated what we said in relation to the well applications, where we were expressing some doubts about the 17-year period that was being proposed, and also expressing concerns in that response about furthermore objecting to the applications if it was in any way related to support the generation of electricity from hydraulic fracking. And I think that remains the case here. And so that's our recommendation, Chairman, that in essence we're saying, well, we're expressing some concerns about the need for the 17 years and how it's relating to that. By way of an update, and it is a qualified update, the County Council's Planning Committee did consider the 8 applications today that we'd responded to in terms of the CPO proposal. And whilst they've made decisions on all applications to say they're minded to approve those applications based on conventional extraction of gas only, that is, as I understand it, subject to clearance from the Secretary of State, who is currently dealing with a screening direction request from Friends of the Earth, so that there is subject to that. But that's their applications, not our consultation response on this, which in our opinion stands in any event.
I'll open it up for questions or comments. Councillor Joy Andrews.
Yeah, just for clarification, because I did read this, and this is going to the Secretary of State, not North Yorkshire County Council. So, that's fine. Yeah, because I did see on social media today after I'd trawled through it all that they'd looked at it, and I thought, well, why are we being consulted on it? But if it's going to that's fine.
Councillor Andrews.
Yes, I think, Chairman, that's fine. I think the point is that they have Third Energy have been talking about dewatering, and that would extend the life of the gas sites. However, in submitting their justification for the increase of time, I don't think they've actually put a case in favour of dewatering, and so therefore you just wonder why they're doing it if they're not preparing for another go at fracking when the moratorium is lifted.
Just from the chair, I mean, I think we're all on the same page with this. We're looking at this and thinking conventional gas, we understand conventional gas is running out. I've seen no justification to expand this to 15 years because we've no idea whether there's enough gas there to keep going for the next 15 years. And I certainly think that with regards to hydraulic fracturing, this council's made its view on it very clear that there, we do not support that. We have a moratorium on it. I think that our response is commensurate with what this council has said. So if members are happy, I will ask you to put that response in. Do we need a vote?
Yes, we should vote.
Members, can we please vote on this? Thank you, members. Unsurprisingly, that's unanimous. Yeah. The last item on the agenda is at page 380. It is the timetable of meetings for the rest of this year and next year. It is for information, unless anybody has some burning issues about whether the dates clash with the Rydell show or...
Somebody's birthday. Or,
shh! Shh! No, it doesn't matter. Or anything else. If members are happy, then I think we should just... do we need to vote? I think we do need to vote, don't we? Or is it going, it goes to full council?
It's just noted, isn't it?
It is just for notice. But if,
it's a note, but if there was anything members had raised, I would have...
Yeah, I don't think it clashes with Rydell show, which has previously been an issue. Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. And then the remaining items are the list of delegated decisions, which you will find at page 384, and then the appeals notice, which is at page 389, which is a conundrum because it says dismissed, but it is partly upheld, but I'd let you fill members in on that.
Yes, it's one of those where the inspector, I think if you asked the appellant whether he thought he'd won or not, I think he'd say, no, I haven't. But it was an application for a very, very large extension to a property in West Lutton, partly to the front and to the side, but also a re-roofing, I think it was of a swimming pool enclosure at the rear, which slightly raised it to the rear, but for a long distance. The inspector dismissed the very large extension to the front of the side, but permitted the modest raising of the roof at the side to the rear. So this is what we would call a split decision. Sometimes they do that where they can differentiate parts of a scheme, and that's what they've done on this occasion.
Thank you very much, members. It's 9:04. I'll declare the meeting closed. Thank you for your attendance.